My talkback guest of the morning is science fiction writer and editor Frederick Paul. Mr. Paul is a former president of the Science Fiction Writers of America and science fiction editor with Bantam Books, along with outstanding credit as an author himself. Our conversation of this morning is open to our listeners and can range all the way from the early recorded writings of Nostradamus to the current craze known as Star Trek or Star Wars. In other words, there's plenty of opportunity to branch out this day and to discuss some of the elements within the framework of science fiction that you've always wanted to talk about. Our telephone lines are available to callers who would dial our familiar number, which is 623-3878. You can call at any time during the course of this half hour. There is no need to know your name. For the moment, we do declare a temporary halt from this initial beginning to bring you up to date on something that's relevant to everyone. Our guest of the morning is the author, co-author, or editor of more than 70 science fiction works and is a four-time Hugo Award recipient, as well as the winner of the coveted Nebula Award. Current titles include Man Plus, Father Star, and The Problem Pit. His most recent include Man Plus and The Invisible Men, but many will also remember Stargate and The Space Merchants, the latter having been written by C.M. Kornblut and generally accepted to be one of the all-time classics in the field. We're pleased to have with us this morning Frederick Paul, in conjunction with his appearance tonight at the University of Maine in Augusta as part of a Forum A presentation. For listeners, this is an invitation to join in the conversation at our familiar number, which is 623-3878. As I first inquire of Mr. Paul for an explanation of why the great fuss and to-do, particularly in this movie Star Wars, which is locally showing, I guess, 15 weeks, and it's going to continue through Christmas. Why?
It's a big
Why?
American success story.
And you haven't seen it either.
I haven't seen it. I haven't had a chance to. When it was showing in the neighborhood theaters near where I live, I was somewhere else. And I've been where it was shown several times, but I was always doing something else. I'll catch up with it. But it's a great movie, I'm told by everybody who's seen it. We people who write and read science fiction have always known it was fun. But Star Wars is the first indication that anyone in Hollywood ever knew it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
All the science fiction movies I've ever seen have either been portentous sort of documentary things, almost a religious experience, like 2001, where the philosophy is very heavy and beautiful, but not exactly cheerful. Or things about giant cockroaches eating Tokyo, which is the familiar science fiction form. And Star Wars is the first one, I think, that has shown that the future can be enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Well, apparently this is really having a local success, and if you're going to be here for any amount of time, I'd say we'll go over and see it together again.
I'd love to see it. I keep meaning to see it.
However, you know, we go back to some of the science fiction. The 1930s is an example. I wonder how you look upon, do you look upon science fiction today as somewhat different? You told me that you started really in your teens becoming interested in science fiction.
I started reading it when I was 10. I started writing it professionally in my teens. Science fiction has, prevailing form of science fiction in the United States when I began reading it, when everybody began 30 or more years ago, was in pulp magazines. Mm. And most of the stories were subject to the constraints of the pulp field. The covers would have a beautiful, scantily clad girl being abducted by a green-scaled monster with two heads or something like that. And the stories reflected that. At the same time, there was a lot of science fiction being written and published by people like Olaf Stapledon and H.G. Wells and S. Fowler Wright and so on, which were not like that at all. But it's just in the last decade or maybe 20 years in the United States that American science fiction has rejoined the mainstream, and it has changed. It's become more literary, more concerned with reality. Arthur Clarke was asked once why he wrote science fiction. He said it's because it's the only literature that concerns itself with reality, which is the reality of change, mm-hmm. the biggest reality that confronts us all.
So are we bringing into the field perhaps people who are more astute and perhaps more literally, who have greater expertise in the whole field of literature today than that?
Oh, I think that's, as you mentioned, I used to be president of the trade union, the Science Fiction Writers of America. We had 450 members, and among them were 20 or 30 who had doctoral degrees in one discipline or another, and a good many who have had great success in writing apart from science fiction. Ursula Le Guin, for example, one of the best contemporary science fiction writers, has had the National Book Award for books that had nothing to do with science fiction.
Do we travel with in so-called terms of fads wherein science fiction is concerned? Is there a theme that becomes predominant one time only to die out and something else replaces it?
That happens a little bit, but less in science fiction than in most forms of writing or most forms of activity. And I think the reason is that science fiction writers are such stubborn individualists. A couple of psychologists made a study of science fiction writers some years ago. And they found out that the dominant trait in which science fiction writers were different from human beings is stubbornness.
Stubbornness.
Yeah. They called it something else. They called it adventurous versus withdrawn cyclothymia, but that's what it meant. Science fiction writers do not suffer things gladly. If they don't like what's going on, they don't fold up and withdraw. They complain and scream and holler and stick to their own opinions, whatever.
Yeah.
So the fads don't happen in the same way because... Bob Heinlein does his thing no matter what anybody else is doing, and so does Samuel R. Delaney, and so does Ursula Le Guin.
I think the term science fiction is interesting because it almost seems to have, there's a paradox involved there. The term science being, basically you can prove things. On the other side of it, we have fiction, which is fantasy. So you're dealing both with that which is fact, but then you're also dealing with that which is fantasy.
The name does give a sort of a wrong impression, but it's just a name. I mean, my name's Fred. I don't think it describes me very well, but it's the name that was given to me, and that's what I answer to. And science fiction is what answers to that name when you call it. It doesn't always have anything to do with science. A great deal of it is science-based, but there are writers like Ray Bradbury who not only doesn't write about science, but doesn't understand it and doesn't even like it.
Mm-hmm.
He dislikes science and he dislikes technology. He won't drive a car. He won't fly in a plane. He'd prefer to be in the, I would say, the early part of the 20th century or maybe the late 19th if he had his choice. But he writes beautifully. He's one of the most poetic and sensitive science fiction writers around. The thing that distinguishes science fiction from other kinds of writing, I think, is not the fact that science is involved, but that science fiction writers take an objective look at the world and take out pieces of it and replace them with other pieces and see how it works. They assume that Martians land and what would happen. They assume that somebody invents a process for letting people live forever and what happens to the world. What's the impact on you and me? They assume that somebody learns to read minds and what does that do to social relationships and the way people get along with each other. This is the science fiction method, and it's worth that.
You have a greater challenge as a science fiction writer, though, haven't you, than just ordinary writers? Because you've got the whole universe as a whole background to operate from, as opposed to just the narrow scope of the world.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I think science fiction is much harder to write than anything else. You not only have to write as well as you can. A science fiction story should meet the same constraints as any other kind of writing. But you have to invent a world.
Mm-hmm. I think you're telling me something, too. You're telling me that perhaps that the imagination is going to be the greater part of the necessary assets of the true science fiction, right, as opposed to science.
The imagination is important, but any novel, whether it's science fiction or not, should say accurately anything that it says is fact. I mean, if you read a mystery story and it's set in Maine and it has... Spanish moss hanging from the trees, you mistrust that writer because he doesn't know the main locale. He's writing about something he doesn't know. If you read a science fiction story and it has to do with travel to another planet and you find in it that the writer obviously doesn't know how long it takes or what a rocket ship is like or anything like that, then you mistrust it. So a science fiction story needs to be accurate in anything that has to do with reality. And most science fiction writers, I mentioned one or two who aren't interested in science, most of them are fans of science. I am. I enjoy it. It's a spectator sport for me. And I think I'm pretty reliable in scientific questions.
Let me remind our listeners that we are doing a program this morning with Mr. Frederick Paul, who is in the Augusta area in conjunction with an appearance this evening at Forum May at the University of Maine in Augusta on science fiction. Frederick Paul, who is here and can answer some of the questions that you may have with regards to the subject we're about to talk about. Perhaps UFOs, unidentified flying objects, things of this nature. We're going to take a brief break, reminding you that our telephone number here is 623-3878. Indeed, we'd like to hear from you. Our program this morning with Frederick Paul, science fiction writer, editor. He's with Bantam Books, former president of the Science Fiction Writers of America. And any of you who would like to join us in conversation having to do with the subject of science fiction this morning, indeed our lines are available to you, and this is the perfect opportunity to talk to Mr. Paul, who will be appearing this evening in a Forum A presentation at the University of Maine in Augusta. I'm wondering, what is your message to the people of the Forum A group who will be appearing this evening?
Well, more or less the same sorts of things we're talking about now. I'm going to talk about what science fiction is, how I got into it, where I get those crazy ideas, which is a question that always comes up, and a little bit about some of the predictions in science fiction that have come true and some of the ones that haven't come true yet but look as if they might. Things like ESP and UFOs and intelligent robots and so on.
Let's talk about UFOs. Have you ever seen a UFO?
Never have seen one, but I'm a star watcher. I usually know what's in the sky. Most people hardly ever look up, and if they see a bright light in the sky, it catches them unaware, and they say, wow, that's got to be a flying saucer, when it's probably a meteorite or a comet or just the planet Venus on a good night. I was challenged once. I said something like that on the air, and a man named George Early called me up and said, I'm the Connecticut State Chairman of NICAP, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. And you've just dismissed 20,000 recorded sightings offhand. And I would like to know if you have dismissed them out of your own investigation or because you've listened to somebody else who doesn't believe in them and just accepting his word for it. And he had me fair and square because I really hadn't done any investigation.
Well, if you...
So for a period of about 3 years, I visited a lot of sites where sightings had occurred and talked to a lot of people and read the literature and went to meetings of various UFO groups. And I called George up and said, I've done it all, and I still don't believe.
Aha, that was my next question. After, if you had any opportunity of at least exposure to people who firmly believe in the concept of it, whether...
There are some very good people who believe firmly that we have been visited by extraterrestrials. I've met a number of them. J. Allen Hynek from Northwestern University in Evanston, well-known astronomer and a very sensible person, and I don't share his belief, but I certainly have to respect it. But most of the major sightings seem to have some built-in flaw somewhere. For example, there's some beautiful pictures that somebody took of UFOs from an island off the coast of Brazil, and they're very convincing. They look exactly the way they would look if you had a camera in your pocket and you saw these things in the sky and you whipped out the camera and shot off some film as fast as you could. And the only thing that's wrong with them is that the guy who took them admitted having faked some photographs a couple of years before that. Well, that doesn't prove that these are fakes, but it makes me lose interest.
Let me remind our listeners that the lines are available to you. Any of you who want to call, 623-3878, and Frederick Paul is here this morning to answer some of the questions that you may have on the whole area of science fiction. 623-3878. I want to ask something that I think is a very basic question to what we're talking about here this morning, and that is, you know, UFOs, cast that aside for the time being, but life as it may exist in the universe other than we here in what we call Earth.
Oh, I don't think there's any question that there's got to be life elsewhere in the universe. There are over 100 billion stars in our own galaxy alone, and I think the count is now up to something like 100 billion other galaxies that have been photographed in the big telescopes. So that's a lot of stars. We have reason to believe that a large fraction of them have planets, and then it gets speculative after that. There's a man at the Rand Corporation in California named Stephen Dole who once developed a mathematical formula to predict how many habitable planets there were in our own galaxy. The formula is not what I would call one of your most reliable sources of information because it contains 38 separate quantities, every one of which is a guess. But for better or worse, the number he came up with was 63 million inhabitable planets in our own galaxy. Well, if that's so, there can hardly be any question that some of them have to be inhabited, and some of them presumably have scientific, technological civilizations, or have had, or will have, like our own. So the odds are just terribly in favor of intelligent life somewhere else. The question in my mind is whether they have bothered to visit us, or whether it's feasible for one intelligent race to visit another on a planet of another star because the distances are so immense and the times are so great.
How do you feel about the recent revelations of the books that have been written, and I suppose this comes under science fiction too, relating back to very, very early times of the Earth, where they said that, you know, visitors have visited the Earth?
The Erich von Däniken books. Phantom has published them, and we've sold millions of copies of them, and I find them interesting as science fiction, but I don't believe that we were, in fact, visited by ancient astronauts. The evidence there is not very good either.
Too many flaws?
Well, there are logical flaws as well as factual flaws. One of the arguments is that the Mexicans built pyramids and the Egyptians built pyramids, and therefore somebody must have come from space and told them how to build a pyramid, because they certainly had no contact with each other. Well, that doesn't seem to me to be good logic. If you're going to try to build something big out of rock, there's a very limited number of shapes you can build it in, otherwise it falls down, and a pyramid is about the only one that works. I mean, you can pile it in a big heap. But if you want it to look regular in any way, the pyramid shape is the only one that really will suffice. And some of the things like the tracings on the plains of Peru, I believe it is.
Incas.
Right. Well, there are these things that have been carefully laid out on the plains, very large drawings of animals or symbolic figures or geometric figures. And the argument has been that these had to be done for the purpose of entertaining people from space, because you can't see them from the surface. Yeah. You have to get up in the air to see them to begin with.
Get that broad overall mountain view.
And that doesn't seem to me to be very probable either. If I wanted to entertain people from space, I would find a better way of doing it. I don't know why those figures were drawn there, but I doubt that that's the reason.
I'm going to take a break again in the show and again remind our listeners that we have an opportunity for your calls this morning. We'd like to hear from you. On the other hand, maybe you just want to listen to us. 623-3878 is the telephone number, and I guess we're going to get some telephone action right now. We're going to take a brief break in the program, and we'll be right back with Frederick Paul on science fiction. Our program this morning with Frederick Paul, and we've got some people on the telephone, so let's go to the line and find out what we've got for questions. Good morning.
Good morning, WFAU.
This is Talkback.
Yes. Is Mr. Paul there?
Right here.
I read a recent article in Starlog magazine where either Ivan Goff or Ben Roberts gave their opinion that science fiction is now the becoming trend as an expression for giving morals or ideals, and that Westerns have, you know, passed this, which used to be popular 10 years ago, you know, what is used for giving social commentary and morals. I was wondering, what does Mr. Poole think about that comment they made?
Well, I think that for a long time, science fiction has been a favorite vehicle of many writers to express their feelings about the morality and the society we live in. Not just in the last few years, and certainly not since Star Wars, but that's what H.G. Wells was writing about 75 years ago, and many people since them. C.S. Lewis wrote three or four very fine novels, which were essentially a practicing Christian's view of what was wrong with the world we live in, expressed as science fiction stories. So I think that that's something that's been going on for a long time. What has happened lately has been, I think, that more people are paying attention to what science fiction says, not that there's more of it being written.
I see. Let's try to think of another question here. What do you think of the current or new TV shows this year on National Network? Are they plausible? Are they far-fetched?
The science fiction shows?
Mm-hmm.
The ones I've seen, I haven't really enjoyed very much. I haven't seen very many of them because I don't have much time to watch TV. But I think they probably wouldn't like my naming them. But the ones that I have seen have usually seemed to lack the fundamental necessity for a science fiction story, which is a certain amount of intelligence. I just can't believe that these things would happen. A science fiction story has to make you believe it, at least while you're reading it. And these shows don't ever make me believe it.
One more question. How does a writer distinguish between science fiction and fantasy?
Well, a science fiction story, as I said, should make you believe it at least while you're reading it. A fantasy story, you don't have to believe at all. You know that the Lord of the Rings is not true. You're just reading it anyhow because you like the way Tolkien writes. And you like the feeling that something like that is a place to escape to in the imagination. Science fiction, you should feel that, by gosh, this really could happen given the right circumstances.
Well, I thank you, sir, and I hope to enjoy your speech tonight at UMA.
Thank you for calling. 623-3878 is the number, and we have an opportunity for you to call. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning there. I'm not that intimately familiar with your work, Mr. Paul, but I wanted to ask you about your latest award-winning novel, because I happened to hear a little bit about it.
Man Plus, yeah.
It has something to do with something that's added to man, so that he becomes some new super being of some sort, and I don't know what was added. Could you explain it to me?
Well, that concept is not original with me. It was proposed by some scientists for the National Aeronautics and Space Administration 10 or 12 years ago. It's what's called a cyborg, a cybernetic organism, a human being who has been surgically or otherwise changed around so that he can do things that normal human beings can't do. There's a big TV show like that, The $6 Million Man.
Right, physically, mentally, or both?
Both. In the case of my cyborg, he has been so altered that he can live on the surface of the planet Mars, which means that his lungs have to be taken out and replaced with something that will keep him oxygenated in an environment where there isn't any air to speak of.
That's interesting.
He's able to see with the aid of ultraviolet and infrared rays, which are a better source of light than the visible spectrum on Mars.
Right.
And he's got substantial changes made in his brain and perceptual system so that he can function on his own and do a lot of things that most of us can't do without outside aid.
Right. I'd like to make a suggestion if you have a pencil and paper, just something that you could check into. I don't know too much about science fiction.
I'll give him a pencil and paper.
Okay.
I'm not too knowledgeable about science fiction, and I'm not religious at all, but I do spend a fair amount of time researching the scriptures. And you want to check into a concept which historically occurred after the day of Pentecost, which is the availability to man of pneuma, P-N-E-U-M-A, Hagion, H-A-G-I-O-N, or spirit or power from on high.
And this spell Hagion again?
H-A-G-I-O-N.
Uh-huh.
Pneuma Hagion, spirit or power from on high. And this refers to the spiritual enablements that were given to man by God through the mediation or ministry of Jesus Christ. There are many things there which are fields that sci-fi seems to be interested in. They talk about perception beyond the five senses and things of that nature.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
You said you weren't very religious, but you also said you spent a lot of time researching into the scriptures. I can't quite reconcile that in my mind.
Oh, well, religion is man-made. It's just what it's characterized by doctrine. You know, if you believe thus and so, you can be a member of my church. If you don't, you can't, that kind of thing. Whereas the scriptures themselves just declare themselves to be the truth.
I see.
That's what George Washington believed. That's what Jefferson believed, some of the others.
Uh-huh.
I'm more there. I think religion is probably missing the point because they don't see the simple truth.
You mean organized religion, churches.
And when you compare, for example, that thing in Genesis 1:1 and 1:2, there's no verb form to be in the ancient language. There were eons and eons between the creation of the heavens and the earth by the Creator, and that specific event, the earth became without form and void, not was.
I see. Well, thank
you. In English, in the King James, it says was. Well, that's a rather big difference.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir.
623-3878. We've got about 3 minutes left in the show. What do you think about the official attitude of our government in trying to explore other planets?
Oh, it's the only way to go. The space program is the most important thing that the government is doing. It's far more important in the long run than any of the ameliorative things that they're trying to do about making the conditions of life a little better here. Also, probably will pay off better in the long run.
Well, is it your feeling, however, that the fact that so far we haven't found, you know, one of those green monsters or these creatures that is on one of the...
Well, that's a big disappointment. But that's
what I mean.
That's not what it's about.
Whether it's going to turn off some people who might otherwise still have the possibility of belief that there is
there. It's a disappointment to me. I wish they'd find some nice friendly aliens out there we could visit and keep their pets or whatever. But the purpose of the space program is not to meet aliens or to invent the frying pan or any of the other things we're told that it did. The purpose of the space program is to acquire knowledge that can't be acquired any other way. And the only way it can be acquired is through going into space to find it. And some of that knowledge is, you can't say what it is until you find it. But what we have learned already has included things like the Van Allen belts, which turn out to be the key to the survival of life on Earth. Without them, we'd all be dead. The hydrogen fusion reaction was discovered through investigating mathematically, not by direct observation, the processes that go on in the heart of the sun. And what is out there yet to be learned, I can't imagine, but it's certainly going to be more valuable than anything we own right now.
Is the day fast coming when we're going to be able to move back and forth in these various planets?
I think so.
Yep.
It's going to be, unless somebody invents a really jazzy new form of propulsion, which I can't imagine, it's going to be an expensive, slow process, but I think the day is coming when it'll happen anyhow.
What about one of these projectors that will be here and then...
That'd be nice.
Unfortunately,
nobody quite knows how to do it.
Frederick Paul, my guest this morning, much success to you in the future with science fiction, and success tonight in your appearance at the University of Maine with the Forum May presentation.
Oh, thank you very much.
Very delightful having you with us this morning. Tomorrow we'll be back. Our program tomorrow will deal with an open forum listener's choice. We invite you to be on hand at 9:30. Norm Gallant speaking. Thank you for listening.
WFAU 1340.